following edition of Harlow on Healthcare comes to you from HIMSS 2019, right here on Healthcare Now Radio.
It's HIMSS 2019, where champions of health unite. And this is David Harlow on Healthcare Now Radio. I'm speaking with the folks from To Be Precise, Asaf Halevi, CEO, and Joel Diamond, Chief Medical Officer. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So can you give me the 25 words or less version of what is To Be Precise doing in the field of precision medicine?
To Be Precise provides precise care for patients, enabling physicians to take advantage of the science and genomic power as they practice medicine in the new era of healthcare.
Great. So if we can go to the next level, can you give me some concrete examples of how this is being applied? What are you plugging into in the existing IT infrastructure and healthcare data sources? And what are some exciting things that this platform is enabling?
Yeah, so I think, you know, first of all, as advanced and as powerful that healthcare is today, there are many, many areas of imprecision, you know, way of handling treatments and choosing the right treatment for the patient. What we do, leveraging the modern technology that we have, which is a cloud-based solution, we have the ability to help physicians to get the right medication for the patient first time around, and provide a way more accurate and safe way of treating whatever conditions that they have. People which are poor metabolizers or hypermetabolizers will respond totally different to different medications, which actually, without a genetic test to discover that, their ability to effectively, you know, benefit from the drug will be dramatically different between, you know, different individuals.
Right. So I understand that we're sort of early days here, where there are some drugs or therapies being developed together with genomic tests that would identify appropriate implementations or uses, or who's a candidate to use a particular therapy. Are you seeing particular areas of viability today? And where do you see sort of clinically areas of promise where this can develop in the future? Because my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, that there isn't a whole lot of individual targets that have been mapped in this way for therapies today.
So one, we should also add, it's not just an area of pharmacogenomics. And so if we're talking where the standard of care is today, we've long recognized patients that are at risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer syndrome, BRCA gene is an example of that, or Lynch syndrome for colon cancer. So one part I would say that we've lived in that era where we've passed it. Where we failed is having technology tools at the point of care to recognize those patients and make sure they get appropriate genetic screening, which is important not just to them, but also their family members as well. So early diagnosis of potential genetic diseases that leads to more effective treatment, there are many examples where that is the standard of care today. If we look at pharmacogenomics, to your point specifically, and where some of those areas are, some of them are more controversial than others. Some areas we know. So patients that are prescribed Plavix after a cardiac event for antiplatelet treatment, the promise to those patients that it's going to do secondary prevention of having a heart attack may not be true at all if they're a rapid metabolizer. And we're seeing more and more that using pharmacogenomics to help guide that therapy makes a lot of sense. We look at new treatments breast cancer that were announced this year, where tamoxifen is part of a regimen for women. And tamoxifen, particularly if it's given with other medicines, including, for instance, antidepressant medicines, may be less effective at preventing recurrence of breast cancer than not. So these are the areas where I think the impact is so potentially high by prescribing the wrong drug that it starts making more and more sense. And then the third area where we've seen a huge uptake is in behavioral health, because we've only practiced on a trial and error method for our whole lives. Give a patient a drug, wait 6 weeks, adjust the dose, 3 or 4 iterations of this, and the impact is so huge. And so using this, not necessarily as a first line therapy, but help guiding the next level, where we're not just simply picking out of a hat, but we're applying some rigor to this, makes a whole lot of sense.
Sure, because in some cases, particularly in that area, my understanding is that you end up losing some patients. They don't want to go on something else for 6 weeks that's going to give them various side effects and not address their clinical issues. So this at least allows you to keep those patients in the system and hopefully help them in the long run.
Yeah, and the other side of it, too, is I think patient compliance we're starting to see is improved because patients, knowing that their doctor has not just randomly chosen a drug, but picked a drug that seemed to be specific to their DNA, really helps people say, let me be compliant with this drug that may take several weeks to be therapeutic. And the other aspect of this is as we start getting into the drug-drug-gene interaction piece, which is more complex, then a clinician looking at the overall med list may say, it's very, very difficult to treat this patient's depression, but maybe the right thing to do is switch out one of their other drugs, or maybe a different blood pressure medicine that's an easy switch out as I'm working to get them therapeutic on their antidepressant treatment.
So how do your tools fit into a typical clinician's workflow?
So that's a second angle of, I think, of what we're doing from the, you know, uniqueness standpoint is the clinical workflow integration. We have a very we've developed a very unique approach to have a seamless one click to value approach to bring insights and guidance, so to speak, to the point of care in an EHR neutral kind of way, such that the user is not taken away from their workflow or from the system that they're working in. And we bring it back into their environment, wherever it is.
I think we're very, very close. And one of the things that I think all of us have learned over the years is to introduce another level of alert fatigue is probably the last thing that we want to do right now, particularly in this era of physician burnout. And not only are we bringing another level of clinical support, but we're also doing that in a way that a lot of physicians have sort of faded knowledge because the last time they took a genetics course could have been many years ago in medical school. So to bring those insights really directly into their point of care without leaving their workflow, that makes it very, very simple for them to click and move on, as Asaf described, is really the key to make this change in the way physicians start thinking about how they prescribe drugs.
In your experience to date, do you see easy adoption by physicians? Oh, this is a great tool because I don't remember my genetics class, or is it, can you explain to me how this works? Can I really rely on this? What are you telling me? How do I use this? What's the sort of range of reaction that you got?
Yeah, so our approach to this is there's always an ability to click and see the evidence-based medicine and dig down and see deeper, but really recognizing that at the point of care, show me what's bad and what's good, and if it's bad, show me a therapeutic alternative. And make sure that that therapeutic alternative you suggested has also been checked against their genes. So I could simply say, if Plavix is the wrong choice, can I pick Brintellix as an example? And can I just click on that and move on and know that I'm prescribing safely?
And maybe I'll add two aspects to that. First of all, we're designing our solutions such that, just like in the modern application today, if you're downloading an application and you need to go and read a manual or go through some training, that means that probably that the application is not modernly designed appropriately in a user-friendly kind of way. So our measure of success to ourselves is that, you know, it's a self-explained, very simple, maybe very complicated and powerful in the backbone of it, but very simple to use and easy to understand almost intuitively as you start to interact with our solution. The second aspect of what I wanted to say is the clinical integration in the workflow is not only at the technology system user experience kind of level, but also at the content of what we bring to the point of care. Because without, to be precise, those genetic tests that are coming back to the point of care are basically flat PDF file-based documents at best. The ability to synthesize clinical information with genomic information together in a clinical genomic data model and then bring actionable information to the point of care such that the clinician, to your point, if they skipped, missed, or did not attend the genetic class, then we can surface clinically relevant insights versus a genomic report of a result.
Well, terrific. Thank you very much for joining me. This has been an interesting education and sounds like an exciting tool being added to the toolbox. Asaf and Joel, thanks for connecting at HIMSS 2019.
You are now tuned in to a special edition of Harlow on Healthcare from HIMSS 2019, right here on Healthcare Now Radio.
And we're back at HIMSS 2019. This is David Harlow on Healthcare Now Radio with Patient Matters. I'm speaking with Eric Van Portvliet, Chief Technology Officer, and Vic Cotapelli, Senior Architect. Welcome to Harlow on Healthcare.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to see you here at HIMSS. So I'd like to start with hearing you folks give me just sort of a thumbnail sketch of some of the pain points that you are addressing for healthcare providers and their patients.
Very good. Patient Matters came together 6 years ago in pursuit of addressing issues in the revenue cycle side of the hospital business, hospital operations. And we've assembled a very rich tool set that helps the pre-access and the registration staff better handle the activities associated with preparing for receiving of a patient, and those being the registration activities and the clearing of all of the identification and eligibility benefits and other things that are geared more towards the financial side of the patient's experience as opposed to the clinical side. Sure. So some of those pain points have to do with taking quite a bit of disconnected data and putting it together in a fashion that helps the healthcare or the provider workforce carry on that conversation with the patient in a smooth, productive fashion, because there's just a small amount of time to get that work done.
Right. And I mean, there's just a tiny piece of this is addressing just patient identity, which has become a larger and larger problem. For years, I really loved the idea of the vein scan, the patient palm vein scan, and then I read a couple months ago that that's been hacked and people can spoof the vein scanners. And I thought, well, now what? I imagine, I don't know if you're integrating with technology like that or other sorts of identifiers for patients, but it just strikes me that it's a never-ending battle.
Our tool set, our package, pulls together a number of key types of data. We are helping the provider workforce know more about the data that they're putting into their master system of record, and to do it in a fashion where that data is clean. So we're partially helping them to clean up data as it goes into the system. We're bringing additional data that's not naturally found in the host system together to help the healthcare worker deal with identity fraud, get a picture of the patient or the guarantor's financial perspective, and also then leads into activities such as healthcare benefit eligibility coverage, and then estimation. As we think about it, in the end, there's going to be a discussion about patient responsibility or guarantor responsibility from a financial perspective. Mm-hmm. And to have that conversation, we need to assemble a bunch of information in a fashion that allows the conversation to occur.
Well, it raises, of course, another issue, which is maybe not within your purview, but an interesting question that is often raised by patients is, what is the price?
Yep.
Certainly patient identity and financial responsibility is important, but I think we're still working on establishing what is the price, being able to answer that question early in the process.
We are. We have an estimation feature in our tool set that allows us to give a very highly accurate picture of what that person responsibility is. And we're looking at the charges, we're looking at the interaction of the payer or the insurance benefit coverage, and in the end, and we have a picture of the historical costs at the physician level within an organization, because while the procedures are scientific and should be done identical from one person to the next, there's some variability that may occur. We capture that information by looking at the data historically for similar procedures. So we're really zeroing in on, if this is your physician and this is your procedure, here's the picture of what your cost is going to be.
Okay. So, I mean, there are a variety of obstacles to reaching the goal that you're talking about, right? And there's sort of, there are technical obstacles, there's sort of, I guess I'd say workflow issues that come up, and other issues that I would call systems issues, not necessarily technology systems issues, but sort of human and management systems issues. I'm wondering if you have an approach to dealing with these in turn. Do you end up customizing or training folks on implementation of your systems at individual institutions? How do you address the sort of the wide range of issues that are out there? What's the process?
Yeah. Our tool is the information and the features within our tool, we believe, are organized in a very highly suitable fashion for a person to make sense of. During our implementation activity, which can take up to 120 days typically, we have our own staff on site at the organization that we're implementing, and working with each of the teams, the team leads, and the individuals, the go-to people that would be using the technology once implementation is over. We have our own people on the floor working with them. We begin to start processing information early in the implementation cycle, so they're beginning to see how our system digests the information from their system and begins to see what the rich experience can be and begins to understand how to use it. We use workflow tools. We steer workflow to the representative or the team that is most capable of dealing with it, and we think that helps address some of what you just talked about.
Sure. So imagine you start with an assessment of what's going on.
We do.
To start?
We do. During the post-sale, pre-implementation kickoff meeting, there, as I mentioned, staff is on site to understand the nature of the workflow. There are times, even in our product suite, where we extend to a variant of our product suite that includes a consultative piece, and where we keep a person on site there for a period of time with continuous, frequent visits to keep and make sure that we're not deviating from what we first taught and showed. Or at the same time, we may be learning that there's been some new variable introduced into that place, into that workforce, and we need to adjust as well.
How transparent is this to the patient? Is the patient just registering on a hospital portal, or what's the perspective of the patient in all of this?
This tool set is an enabler for the healthcare, the provider worker. The patient does not interact with our technology.
Right.
As the patient is sitting there with the registration rep or maybe talking through things with a scheduler, they're not seeing this.
Okay. And is information that's gathered through your tool find its way into other systems of the provider is using?
It does.
So we don't have the problem of, you know, you come through the front door, you fill out a million forms, you go upstairs and they ask you the same questions.
Yeah, right? No. The system of record is the host system, the EHR. We're not displacing any of that. The information that we develop outside of that host system, we deliver back in a variety of methods to make sure that we keep the host system up to date.
Okay.
Notes and other features that are well known within most systems, we feed those features.
And a blue sky question for you. What do you see in the future, 5 years from now? Are we going to solve all the problems of healthcare? Are you going to solve all the problems of healthcare? What's next?
Well, I don't have the budget for that, but I think we can make a good run at some of the things that are very difficult. Today, Patient Matters is, like many of the participants in the healthcare delivery network and delivery solutions, we're embracing machine learning. We've heard these words often in the last 2 to 3 years, and we see many organizations, including ourselves, moving through the natural life cycle of taking on that new technology or maybe a new paradigm. Meaning, you know, we've recognized we need to embrace it. We are working through proof of concept. We've used machine learning in our research lab, and here shortly we'll start seeing some of the benefits showing up in our product. Long term, way out in the future, I think the workforce intelligence, that we talk about the patient, we really, and we should, we help enable the conversations with the patient. We are focused on patient satisfaction. At the same time, I think it's only natural for us to recognize that the provider workforce that serves the patient needs to be enabled with tools, technology, and more of an adaptive tool set that really changes the way it behaves depending on the person that's in the seat, without having to go back to IT and act for a software change request. I think that those tools need to become more adaptive. And, you know, I hate to use the buzzwords over and over again, but if you apply machine learning, potentially that machine just knows how it needs to behave for this person that's the registrar or the scheduler. It knows their strengths, it maybe knows something about their weaknesses, and it starts to aid them.
Great. Well, something to look forward to.
Yes.
Thank you very much for joining me today. This is David Harlow at Healthcare Now Radio, live connecting at HIMSS 2019.